Magic Drive Time, presented by International Diamond Center, Orlando's direct diamond importer and the exclusive jeweler of the Orlando Magic, hits the road now.
Broadcasting live inside the Orlando Magic Studios, here's your host, Aaron Berlin.
Hi, everybody. We are back. We are in action. And I've been able to corral a few other people involved in this show. Dan Savage is with me, as always, here on the summertime edition of the podcast. But we went out, we scoured the Orlando Magic organization, and we were looking for who we thought would be the best possible sidekick, co-host, cohort. And we didn't really have to search that far. I think it was someone that we knew was always in our brains of what he could do. And that man is Josh Cohen. Let's welcome in Josh Cohen right now. Josh, how's it feel?
That's an incredible welcoming, Mr. Berlin. Well, I really appreciate that. Probably a little bit excessive. You don't necessarily have to take it that far. But I do show incredible gratitude for all of your incredible welcoming.
Well, I do think that if I ever had a second career, that career would be as a ring announcer. Because I think I would be fantastic at introducing someone like Roman Reigns.
Well, I have always said, you know, you could be the next Jim Ross. You would be terrific as a WWE ringside announcer, play-by-play, color analyst, whatever you want to call it. I think you would be exceptional in that role.
I just don't know if I could sell as well. What about you, Dan? What do you think?
You could do whatever your mind sets out to be. And while some NBA fans may think that LeBron James going to LA was the biggest signing of the offseason, this show, getting Josh Cohen, is actually the biggest signing.
That's a big addition right there. Josh Cohen, we've talked about doing this for a while. But
my face has turned red. I'm sorry to talk over you, Mr. Berlin. But I have to call you Mr. Berlin because that's how much I appreciate you having me on the show.
Oh, my God. Is this what this podcast has turned into? Are we that formal now?
Well, we know that the only people you're signing to this show are people who inflate your ego.
That's true. You know, that negotiations with Josh were very difficult. They were. There was a lot of back and forth. I initially gave him a number, and then he said that was disgraceful to him. He said that he wouldn't even entertain that offer. He got me for about an extra couple $1,000. I was pretty impressed with his negotiating skills because I always try and lowball. But needless to say, guys, we've got a lot that we could talk about on this podcast because we have not done one of these since mid-June, and that was after the selection of Mo Bamba, Melvin Frazier Jr., and as well as Justin Jackson. And believe it or not, since that has happened, a lot has gone on with this Orlando Magic organization. We had free agency. We had Summer League. We got to know Steve Clifford a little bit more, and I think that's what we're going to focus on in the crux of today's show. Let's start with Summer League, because for the last 4 years that I've been here, we have had the Orlando Pro Summer League, and that has been the Orlando Magic Summer League. They've welcomed in 8 teams every year. They've hosted them. They've done it in the practice gym. This year was completely different on so many levels. There was probably the most intrigue in any of the summer leagues that I have been around from the standpoint of the personnel on the floor, but from just an atmosphere standpoint and an atmospheric thing. You guys were there. I did not go to summer league. I can't stand Vegas. I don't like Vegas. It's not my type of town. But I just want to get like your guys' perception of what the NBA summer league in Las Vegas was like, what you liked about it, what you didn't like about it, because it's essentially a 2-week thing. And you're in Vegas, and it's a little bit different. So let's do a little roundtable. Let's hear what your guys' favorite things were and what your least favorite things were.
Well, I'll start off here since I got to Vegas first and was there for the practice portion before trading off later in the week with Josh. And for Vegas, look, I was a big Orlando Pro Summer League guy. We've been doing this for 10-plus years in terms of Josh and I covering it. And we were assigned by the NBA every year to cover every single team and every single game. So we felt very involved and had a large investment in the Orlando Pro Summer League. But with Vegas, it's an experience, and you get a chance to get your hands on and get a close-up look with every player that's involved in the business. And you got to see some of the premier matchups that fans wanted to see right off the bat. So I enjoyed the Las Vegas Summer League experience. Then plus getting to go out into the city and interact with people throughout the business, throughout all 30 teams. We got to talk to scouts. We got to talk to coaches. Got to reconnect with people that we've had here in Orlando in the past. So a very informative week. Got a real good sense of what other teams feel about our players and what their thoughts are. So I left the week feeling much more informed and having a better understanding as of the league as a whole.
What about you, Josh? Josh, you were there for the second half of Summer League, essentially. So once kind of the pool play ended and the tournament started, what was kind of the coolest thing, as well as what was kind of the thing that you missed about the Orlando Pro Summer League?
Well, regardless of where Summer League is located, I always think it's great because it's an intimate environment. You get to meet a lot of people. You get to talk to a lot of people in the industry, and you get to get a lot of insight on what's going on around the league. And as Dan said, just to piggyback on the information he provided, I think you gain a lot of intel just talking to different people in the business, whether it's other team site individuals, writers, broadcasters, etc., or front office personnel as well. I mean, everybody's there. Everybody is kind of flowing around, and it's just very comforting to meet others in the industry and learn about what they're doing and what they're up to and, you know, their position on certain things, their opinions. So it's a great experience regardless of where it's located. I certainly do miss the Orlando Pro Summer League. That was a much more intimate environment, and only select teams were participating when it was here. But at the same time, when you have all 30 teams involved in one location, you really get so much insight. And I always appreciate having the opportunity to talk to different people inside the industry.
I was going to say, and that was going to be my next question, at what point does it feel too big? Does it feel too much like a spectacle? I know this was the first time that the NBA Summer League, the one that they specifically host, because there are other ones. There was Utah this year. There was also Sacramento. But all 30 teams were under that Las Vegas umbrella this year. Did it almost feel too big? Did it almost feel like Summer League isn't what it was 5 years ago, that we're almost treating it kind of like a training camp, essentially, which is what it is? It's a training camp for young rookies. But is that the best place to take young rookies the second that they're drafted and it's their first exposure to the NBA? Is that too big of an environment for them already?
Well, it definitely weeds out the people who can't remain focused. So from that perspective, it's a good learning week. I think what the NBA has done is a tremendous job of managing this whole thing. You look at when the league went there back in All-Star Weekend, there were some, you know, things around Las Vegas that weren't the brightest moments in league history. But nothing bad has happened out of Summer League over the course of the last few years, and even in this year where you had all 30 NBA teams. So you really have to commend the league for that as a whole. Secondly, when you look at it in the way they structure the week, they keep these players very busy and very tired. There's two-a-day practices for the teams who do a training camp out there before the Summer League starts. And just covering it, I'm exhausted by the start of the games. So I can only imagine how the players feel. And then on the flip side of that, too, you realize you're fighting for a roster spot, trying to prove your spot in the league if you're here. So nobody really wants to do anything that's going to get caught up and go around, because you don't want to be in the news for the wrong reason out there in Las Vegas. So while Las Vegas is Sin City, and there is a lot of temptation around there, the league's really done a good job of creating structure for players, keeping guys out of trouble, and it's really turned into a positive week where not only front office and people like myself and Josh and the media get to look at these players, fans get to get that firsthand experience as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, when you have all 30 teams in one spot, you're guaranteed to see premier matchups. Like, for example, we saw Mo Bamba go up against DeAndre Ayton. You know, I don't think Atlanta played Cleveland in the tournament, but we could have theoretically seen Trae Young versus Colin Sexton. You know, we get to see the core guys, the guys that were selected high in the draft, potentially go up against one another. And in past years, that wasn't a guarantee, because some players were only in Orlando, some players may have only been in Utah, some players may have only been in Vegas. So now you're almost more likely to get those, I would say, prominent matchups between key guys that were selected high in the draft, guys that, you know, clearly mean the most for their teams, at least at this particular stage.
I was going to say, how many times, whether it was last year's Summer League, whether it was 2 years ago, that the three of us sat down and talked about some of the players that had come through the Orlando Pro Summer League, and you almost felt like that you were missing out because multiple teams were going to multiple Summer League multiple Summer Leagues now, and they were picking and choosing where certain guys would play. To me, that is really the best thing about all 30 teams being under one umbrella is what Josh just said. You got to see the top talent go against the top talent. Last year, the Magic probably wouldn't have gotten to see Mo Bamba go opposite of DeAndre Ayton, you know, because Phoenix was not in their Summer League. And it also, from an NBA standpoint, allows them to highlight these guys in a different mold. Like, The other day in the tournament, granted, things had to play out like this, but the Lakers played Cleveland. And why is there intrigue in that? Because of all the roster fluctuation that has gone on between those two teams. But it does create storylines and it does create intrigue. But I thought for the Magic, it was a productive summer league. I thought we really got to see what people had been clamoring about since they selected Mo Bamba at number six. And for you guys, what was the neatest thing? Because these guys are big. We know that their wingspans are ridiculous. We know that the way that they can move on the court is something that the Magic are very excited about, what their front office is very excited about. But just seeing those two guys on the floor together in summer league, how imposing was that to other teams who necessarily didn't have that length or that size?
Well, if there's one thing I really wanted to convey from this podcast is how daunting the two twin towers of Jonathan Isaac and Mo Bamba are on the court. Because, you know, I go back and look at these highlights. I watch it on TV as well afterwards to get a real good sense of how everything's going. And when you look at it on TV, it's not even nearly as close to how daunting it is in person. They really look like freak physical human beings out there. So if you're in the Orlando area or listening to this podcast, it's one of those things you really want to go come check out, even in the preseason, see if you could get yourself a real close seat or come down during warmups. Because when you see those two guys next to each other, the space that they take up is so huge. And while some of the more gifted NBA big men that they'll go up against have a plethora of moves that they'll be able to combat with Isaac and Bamba's size, when they were going against summer league competition, you saw guys that just had no clue what to do in the paint against that formidable front line. And you had guys that were big men taking floaters, shots that aren't in their arsenal, just because they had no clue what to do to get to the rim and get a shot off against these guys. So the way they alter the game together is something that's really special. And if you look at Jonathan Isaac, the week he had, leading the team in points with 14.3 points per game, rebounds at 7, blocks per game at 2.7, those are impressive numbers. And when you add together and culminate the fact that both Bamba and Isaac left the week averaging a combined 5 blocks per game, that's intimidating.
I was going to say, Josh, is that the biggest thing that we got to take away from summer league, was how it's going to potentially work with those two?
Yeah, and I wrote about this on OrlandoMagic.com recently, and in today's NBA, there's only one way you can be described as a great defender, and the key word there is versatility, and under versatility is switchability. You right now cannot be a really, really high-level defender unless you can guard multiple positions, unless you have the footwork, the lateral speed, the length to guard guys at different levels. And Bamba and Isaac are both capable of being elite, versatile, switchable defenders. They showed that in flashes at Summer League. Obviously, the competition, as Dan alluded to, is not upper tier, but they gave you a glimpse of what they can be together as they each evolve individually. And we saw it with the Boston Celtics in the playoffs this past year. Now, they don't have bigs like Bamba and Isaac, although Horford is an exceptional team defender. He's not athletic the way Bamba or Isaac is, but the way he's able to guard multiple positions out of the pick and roll, slide his feet, veer back, he's just a smart defender. And obviously from an IQ standpoint, Bamba and Isaac will need to transform at that level. But they have the physical tools, the physical gifts to be two of the best, two of the premier interior defenders, and also two of the best pick and roll defenders because of their ability to guard multiple positions in certain situations.
See, this is why we went out and signed him. This is the type of intel that we needed on this podcast that we just weren't getting. Josh can break it down in so many different ways. But Josh, I think you hit on something that's very interesting, is people didn't get to watch Jonathan Isaac much last year. And I think a lot of people had questions about what he could do in this summer league. And we talk all the time that the first summer league is just kind of getting your feet wet and learning the motions. The second time that you're in summer league, you should come out and you should show flashes of what you're able to do, and you should honestly dominate. Jonathan Isaac did that in year two. And I think to me, that was the most impressive thing, is that we saw Jonathan Isaac look more confident. We saw him look a little bit more assertive. And he looked like he knew what he needed to do on the court. And that was the biggest difference, is if I'm not taking into account any of the actual games that he played this year, if I'm just looking at it from one summer league to the next, there was a lot of growth there with Jonathan Isaac.
Oh, unquestionably. And I think where you see the most growth with Jonathan Isaac is on the offensive end. He just looks so much more comfortable. He has a game plan when he gets the ball in his hands now. And Steve Clifford's given him a very clear focus of where he'd liked him to be on the offensive end. And he looks just so much smoother in his moves, in his delivery, his shot selection. It's something special with Jonathan Isaac. And you really heard it throughout the week how much different front office executives thought he grew over the course of the summer. And you really saw the hard work that he's put in. We know it because we see him in the gym every day for the Orlando Magic, but that hard work went on display when he took the floor for Summer League.
I was going to say, there's something to be said. People sit here and say, well, it's just Summer League, you can't take anything away from it. But from a franchise that over the course of the last 6 years has really struggled with national exposure and having something relevant to talk about, it was nice over a two-week span to have national media speaking about what Bamba and Isaac could potentially do and what those two can grow into. Josh, I just kind of wanted to get your takeaway of what you saw from Isaac over the course of Summer League.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to use NBA comparisons because in a span of a week, comparisons change dramatically. And more important than that,
absolutely.
And more important than that, usually when we make an NBA comparison, we change our mind extremely quickly, and that comparison is thrown out the window before you know it.
And honestly, but it's not fair to the player, too.
It's not fair to the player, because usually we hit the ceiling when we make comparisons. You know, I mean, so many times, you know, Andrew Wiggins was supposed to be the next Kobe Bryant. Not to say that he can't still be the next Kobe Bryant, but right now he's not quite on that level. But there's so many examples, I mean, through NBA history where we've compared this guy to that guy and it doesn't quite live up to that. I do think from a visual standpoint, from a footwork standpoint, Isaac did have some Kevin Durant-ish qualities to him at Summer League. He's probably never going to be polished enough to be the elite scorer that Durant is. Okay, Durant's on another planet. I mean, his ability to find his sweet spots, his ability to take advantage of smaller defenders, his ability to take guys into the post or size them up off the dribble is unprecedented. It's unparalleled. He's unbelievable, which is why he's a two-time finals MVP. However, because Isaac has the length, he has the athleticism, he obviously is a hard worker, those qualities will allow him to do some of the same things that Durant does. And he showed that at Summer League, finding his sweet spots, taking his man off to the left or right. He actually can go either way. He certainly needs to improve his outside shot. He did not make a three in Summer League, so that clearly needs to be improved. But when you're that tall, when you're 7 feet tall, essentially, with, you know, let's say a 7'2 wingspan, right, you have the ability to shoot over just about any defender. And if you can find your target, if you can find your sweet spots, you have the potential to be a knockdown shooter in the NBA. And obviously, he's being molded into being a high-quality player. Not saying he's going to be Kevin Durant, but he has the potential to be a really high-level offensive player.
What were your guys' first impressions of Steve Clifford as the head coach of the Orlando Magic, as well as Pat Delaney? I thought we both got to learn a little bit more about them and maybe what their philosophy is heading into the season.
I'll talk a little bit about Steve Clifford, having the pleasure to have been here with him when he was here for his first stint with the Orlando Magic, and now watching him after growing as a head coach. What Steve Clifford has for the Orlando Magic, especially evident in these summer league practices, is one, the flexibility to be a disciplinarian and then also still be relatable. That's a very hard gift to have as a head coach. But Steve has that gift. When you look at Steve Clifford, the way he runs his practices, he's very hard-nosed, very focused on completing a task the right way. But then what he also does with his players is relate it back to them, why he's having them do something. He's very detailed in explaining that. And not only does he explain to the players why doing a certain thing will help them help the team, he also explains to them why it will help them as a player and grow and give him a role in this league. And for guys who are trying to crack an NBA roster, I think that's very informative, very great to have. So Steve Clifford has that ability. He's also gone through and met with nearly every player on the Magic roster, had dinner with them, explained to him what his focuses are, his goals for them throughout the offseason, and how he'd like them to play heading into next season for the Magic. So a very detailed, oriented head coach, very focused. I think fans are going to be very pleased what they see out of Steve Clifford, and I think players playing for him have a clear understanding what they have to do and where their role is with this team.
I was going to say, because the games are nice, and they're for the fans, and they're for the organization to see how they can do under NBA rules and how they can do against NBA-level competition. But at the end of the day, the most important thing that the Magic get out of this is they get that practice time with both Jonathan Isaac, Melvin Frazier Jr., Mo Bamba, and even though Justin Jackson didn't participate in anything, he was there and he got to get that initial welcoming into the Magic practices. Josh, just how important is that for these young guys and their development and just learning the intricacies of the NBA game and maybe what an NBA practice is potentially like? How important is that for a young player?
I mean, it's essential. I mean, the reality of it is in the NBA, I would say, I don't have an exact percentage on this, but it's a rough estimate. You know, 90% of guys selected in the second round don't pan out. Like, let's just call it like it is. They just don't pan out. However, what I've noticed in the years that I've been covering the NBA is those second round picks or even undrafted guys. You know, I recently did a list on the best undrafted players in NBA history, whether it's Ben Wallace, two all-time great Magic players in Bo Outlaw and Darrell Armstrong. You know, what did they all have in common? They worked incredibly hard. They were highly disciplined, and they figured out their specialty. They figured out their specialty. Ben Wallace was a premier interior defender and a fabulous rebounder. Bo Outlaw, one of the greatest energy hustle guys the league has ever seen. Darrell Armstrong, very similar in the backcourt. You know, Bruce Bowen's another one who figured out how he can last in the NBA, being a shutdown perimeter defender, whether it was going up against Kobe Bryant or Allen Iverson or Tracy McGrady. He was considered the elite backcourt defender during his time. So, Summer League and these initial practices are a great time for these second-round picks or undrafted players to figure out what direction they can go in to last in the NBA. They have to figure out what their niche is. They have to figure out how to perfect their craft, because in all likelihood, they're never going to be the next LeBron James or Kobe Bryant or Shaquille O'Neal or Wilt Chamberlain or whoever. But if they can figure out through these practices, through these summer league games and exhibition, training camp and all that, how they fit, they're going to last. And that right now is what guys like Melvin Frazier Jr., Wesse Wundu, Isaiah Briscoe, Rodney Purvis are all trying to figure out. And I think so far they're doing a good job of that.
I was going to say, we can sit here and talk about how sloppy the games are, and we have mentioned that before, is that some of these games are tough to watch in Summer League. But the thing that you can't replicate, Josh, is something that you hit on earlier, and it's something that Dan has talked about in length as well. It's not just the first-round guys out there. It's not even just the second-round guys out there. It's guys that are legitimately fighting for a spot on an NBA roster or fighting for a training camp invite. And those are things and those are situations that you can't replicate anywhere else, and that's also important for these guys to go against.
Oh, without question. And the one thing the Orlando Magic have been good about as an organization since I've been here is when they invite a player to Summer League, he usually gets a chance to play on the floor. So I know while for fans it may be disappointing that Jonathan Isaac and Mo Bamba don't play in every single game, it's very important for this organization to get a solid look at all the guys that they add to the roster. And then secondly, for those guys to get a chance to prove to them why they belong in the NBA. It then helps you in future years when you're trying to convince a player to join your summer league team to come, because you can say to them, look, over the course of our history, guys that we've invited get a solid chance to showcase what they can do. And not every team in the NBA can say that. So when you look back at the Orlando Magic, they have a track record. As an agent, if you're sending your player there, you have a trust built that your player can get showcased with the Orlando Magic team. And so I know for fans, they can get caught up in just wanting to see Jonathan Isaac. They want to see Mo Bamba. They want to see Briscoe live. For the Orlando Magic, they're really doing themselves a service over the long term by being able to get guys and then showcase them. And when you add players like a Copain or a Briscoe to your roster and give them a chance to make the real team, that continues to add value. And if you're an agent, want to send your player to the Magic Summer League team.
I want to ask you guys both this because I know you guys saw games just outside of the Magic's games. Most impressive Summer League player for each of you guys and kind of the most surprising guy that you guys saw?
Well, looking at the Orlando Magic roster, the guy I was most impressed with was Jonathan Isaac. And I'll just say this because we didn't really have a good look at Mo Bamba before, so it's hard to have that comparison. You can look at his past college years. But Isaac looked like so much more comfortable player. Looked very detailed, skilled at where he wanted to do and how to do it. And so when you see that jump, that gives you hope that this player is going to develop over time. You don't know if that hard work where you see a player coming to the gym every day is going to translate to on the court. But for Isaac, we saw that. He also showed some leadership capabilities, which is very promising for the Orlando Magic future. He was not afraid to take charge of that team and help other players out, including Mo Bamba. So I was very excited by that. That gave me a lot of hope heading into the season and for the long-term future of this team.
I'm going to go with Josh Hart. I know there were a lot of people raving about him toward the end of last season with the Lakers, and I think the conclusion on him was he'd be a nice backup. He's a good maybe sixth or seventh man. He's a sharp shooter. He could defend a little bit. I wouldn't have described him in the past as being ultra versatile or a guy that can take over a game offensively, but he's shown in Summer League that he has a lot going on in his repertoire, and it's expanding. And now I'm understanding why Hart is so highly valued in that Lakers organization. He could be a steal. He was a late first-round pick along with Kuzma, and nobody's really talking about Josh Hart. Obviously, the Lakers with Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, and Lonzo Ball being their main young core to go along with LeBron James now. But Josh Hart, that guy could be a steal. I mean, he just dropped 37 on Cleveland against Colin Sexton the other day, and that was extremely impressive. The way he gets to the basket, spot up and shoot. He plays really hard on the defensive side of the floor. So right now, if I'm going with a Summer League MVP, I'd probably go with Hart.
I was
going
to say, I thought you were going to go a little Svi Mykhailiuk. I thought you
were
going to
give right
me
up
that
there.
Nugget,
he's,
Josh.
He might
I
be
thought you were going to do it, and you didn't.
He's probably in the top five for sure. He dropped 31 on Cleveland.
He was good last night.
His length, his ability to shoot the ball, I think he can really stretch the floor. And he doesn't have the athleticism necessarily to guard speedy, electrifying, explosive wing players. But I think over time, he could last in the NBA because of his ability to shoot the ball and his length.
Anybody kind of surprise you too? I think last year everybody saw glimpses of what Donovan Mitchell could do, but anyone kind of come out of nowhere and really surprise you with what they did?
When you look at these guys, I think Josh touched on it with the Lakers. They last year surprised some people with Kuzma and Ball, and I was just reading a piece by Kevin Pelton today on ESPN.com, really talking about a number of the guys who overperformed their general spot on the Summer League floor. And you look at the Lakers this year with Hart, and another guy that Josh didn't mention was Wagner.
Yeah.
He had a very impressive Summer League, really dominating the glass for them. So the Lakers definitely have a lot to be excited about, even more so than LeBron, or I should say in addition to LeBron. Their Summer League squad really had a lot of bright spots on it. And when you're looking at building assets around a player as talented as LeBron for either development there or for potential future trade use, they definitely have some guys on there that can contribute and add value to their team.
Yeah, no question. But I was going to add two more guys that popped in my head as far as guys that have really stood out in Summer League. One of them, and I know Dan and I have talked about this player multiple times, Furkan Korkmaz with the Sixers out of Turkey. He scored 40 points that one game. And he just reminds me so much. I'm making a magic comparison here. He reminds me so much of Evan Fournier. His footwork, his ability to weave through traffic, his ability to spot up and shoot, his ability to size up a defender and square up and hit a jump shot. Obviously, he's not a great defender, but I was very impressed with his development in Summer League. And the other guy that I really, really like, and I liked him before the draft, and maybe I like him even more now, although he did get hurt late in Summer League, Lonnie Walker out of Miami. I think he has the athleticism. He's explosive. I think he could be a great two-way threat. I think he was an underrated defender at Miami, but they had so many other guys who played great perimeter defense, like Bruce Brown, for example, that I think it took him out of the limelight a little bit. But I think Walker has a chance, especially with San Antonio, to be an excellent multi-dimensional player on both ends of the floor.
Dan, you raise your hand over here. You're kind of excited about this a little bit.
No, I did, because I think the other thing that's important to mention is not only, you know, surpassing expectations, but it's just as hard to live up to expectations.
Yeah.
And when you look at what Wendell Carter's done for the Chicago Bulls, he was touted as a guy who was NBA ready. He drew a lot of the comparisons to Al Horford for his readiness. He's come right out and shown that he can be an effective player for the Chicago Bulls, and they have to be excited about the young core they're building there.
I was going to say, out of nowhere, surprisingly, they've got a lot of intrigue around their roster when you think about Wendell Carter, Markkanen. You also have Chris Dunn. You have Levine. And then you have Jabari Parker, too. They've done a lot of interesting things that I think has brought a lot of intrigue to them. Last comments on Summer League. You guys have anything that you want to hit on specifically? We'll start with Dan and finish up with Josh. Anything that I missed?
Yeah, when you look at this team as a whole, what the Orlando Magic were trying to get out of it, you really wanted to see a chemistry developing between Isaac and Bamba. To me, that was the most important thing, was how are these two guys going to operate together? And not only did they operate well on the court and their games complement each other, but on the side of that, they're growing close off the court as well. So that's very, very intriguing. The other thing that I didn't know how well it would translate, you saw the videos of Mo Bamba's shooting stroke, how he broke it down and then recreated it. And John Denton did a great piece on OrlandoMagic.com breaking down that entire process. But then it comes down to the eye test. Do you see that actual improvement when it comes to players guarding him and it comes to games? And when I look at Mo Bamba, I see a guy who, as a five, who can be as an intimidating defensive threat as he could be. He's got a solid, really good stroke. And when he misses soft, because it's not just about makes. It's about watching the misses, too. And when he misses, his shot is not far off. It's soft. It usually hits front of the rim. He's going to develop as a shooter. His stroke is really good. I think if he continues to work hard on that aspect of a game, it's not going to be long before he's considered a stretch five. And you add, I mean, really think about this. If you think about Rudy Gobert, the type of imposing defensive threat that he is, if you had Rudy Gobert who could also shoot threes and be an impactful offensive player, that's an extremely valuable piece to build your franchise around. So that's got to be the direction for Mo Bamba. It's got to be building up his body. It's got to continue to work on his stroke and then become the max defensive player that he can be. And then it's going to mean bright things for this Orlando Magic
season. Dan, you're a man of very few emotions. You don't show them visibly on your face a lot. You're kind of like a cat in that way. You have emotions, but you don't really like to show them. You're excited about this. You're excited about Isaac and Bamba. You're not coming out and like physically showing it, but I can sense it from you. This is something that I haven't seen in a while.
Well, when you look at this, what you really wanted to see, as Jeff Weltman and John Hammond have come in here and made their blueprint of the organization, a clear direction to where this franchise is going to go. And look, in year one of playing together, Isaac and Bamba may not have huge impacts on the total number of wins for this Orlando Magic organization. But when you look at the future of where this team is headed, there is a clear direction right now. And the other part that's exciting about that and their defensive impact is it also mirrors the direction of the type of head coach that they've hired. Whereas Steve Clifford made his biggest impact in the league, you know, it's controlling the glass. It's having a team that's very disciplined defensively. So all those things are sort of aligned and intertwined. And I think when you have everybody in the organization on the same page as to where the direction of the team is going, this team can overachieve, and that's what you really like to see. There's a clear direction for this franchise now, and it translates to on the court.
There's more oomph in your voice. There's more excitement. I can sense it. What about you, Josh? What about you, JC?
Yeah, I touched on this before, and I wholeheartedly believe this. I think the Boston Celtics have steered organizations in certain directions right now. The success they just had in the playoffs, minus Kyrie Irving, minus Gordon Hayward, even Jaylen Brown missed a couple games in the playoffs, if you have, and I'm repeating myself a little bit, and I apologize for that, but I think it's so
don't
important.
Don't apologize.
I think it's important to emphasize. They have showed us that one of the things that can trump having a premier 30-point-per-game score. Now, granted, obviously, if Kyrie's there, he can average that many points. And Jason Tatum is well on his way to being an outstanding offensive player. But if you have a plethora of multidimensional, versatile, switchable, lengthy, athletic defenders, you are really hard to beat. I guarantee you, I don't know if LeBron James was asked this at all throughout the playoffs, but if he were to tell you, you know, who is the hardest team to go up against, the grittiest, the most resilient, he's going to say the Celtics. I mean, the Celtics showed us that there is a new age way to win basketball games in the NBA. And defensively, there is a reason. 5 years ago, I can almost assure you that neither Bamba or Jaren Jackson Jr. would have been top six draft picks. But because of what they do well, because of what they excel at more than anything else, and they have a lot of room to develop, clearly not yet refined offensively, but it's coming. I think Bamba has more growth, more potential offensively than Jackson. In my opinion, Jackson's a little less polished. But one thing they both can do, ultimately, is guard all five positions. Jackson already showed it in summer league. I think he could probably guard all five right now. I think Bamba, as he puts on more size, more weight, and he's got to develop a little bit more movability. I don't think he's lightning quick moving left to right or right to left yet, but it will come when his body matures and develops. He has a chance to guard as many as all five positions, if not four at the minimum. And the Celtics showed us with Marcus Smart, Marcus Morris, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, Ojeleye, all those guys. What do they all have in common? They are versatile defenders. Granted, Tatum's going to be a superstar, but they didn't have a superstar on that roster in the playoffs, and they made it to Game 7 of the conference finals. There is an alternative way to win games. If you don't have a premier score, an electrifying score, you could still be a very successful team. And with Bamba and Isaac specifically, you have the makeup of a team that'll have those characteristics.
I like this. I'm really enjoying this conversation because we sit around in the office and we talk about this type of stuff all day long. Like, we try and solve every team's problems every single year. We try and solve everybody's problems. But when we get these two guys in a room, this is something I haven't heard in a long time. There's always excitement around a new season, around what a specific roster can do. But as far as building blocks for success, a foundation, a core, you guys seem both just really intrigued and really excited about the potential of where these two guys can go. And I don't remember leaving a summer league during my 4 years here, maybe the first one with Gordon as well as Elfrid Payton, when both those two guys played a little bit. And I think that was their second summer league that I was here. But this is fun. This is something that we haven't been around a lot.
Yeah. I don't mean to interrupt, but we're talking about innovation. We're talking about not following a pattern. It's 2018. Sometimes things change, things shift. There's redirections. And it's possible that the tag team of Isaac and Bamba will be revolutionary. We may not have seen this yet. Now, we've seen Twin Towers in the past, Ralph Sampson, Hakeem Olajuwon, Tim Duncan, David Robinson. I mean, even Shaquille O'Neal, Horace Grant, and Orlando, if you want to go that far. This is different. This is more defensive-oriented. This is more athletic-oriented. This is multidimensional. When we get into the 2020s, we could see multi-teams with these kinds of lineups.
I was going to say, Josh, that's something that's really interesting. You brought up innovation, revolutionary, and trying to change the way the game is played right now. For the last few years, everyone's been playing catch-up to the way that the Warriors play basketball. You know, efficient shooters shoot from three. Rockets tried to do it this year, and they almost got there. Maybe an injury, and they do get there, and then all of a sudden we're chasing the Rockets. But what you have to do is you can't replicate what the Warriors have done. You just can't. Like, that's lightning in a bottle, and it is what it is. You have to find a way to win a championship a different way. You can't follow everybody else's plan, because if you follow everybody else's plan, it's not going to be as good. It's like the sequel. The sequel is never as good as the original. So this is interesting in the fact that you bring this up, that teams are starting to try and figure out different ways to win. And that's what's intriguing about what the Magic have done. While a lot of people say they don't have enough shooting yet, and maybe that is the case, they're trying to put building blocks in place to where they ultimately can get there to win a championship, because they know, and everybody around the league knows, you can't do it the same way that the Warriors have done it.
Yeah, no question. I mean, how many Steph Currys and Klay Thompsons and Kevin Durants are there in the world? Not to say there's a lot of Mo Bamba and Jonathan Isaacs, but if you have the physical tools, you have a better chance of comping Isaac and Bamba than you do Curry and Thompson.
Absolutely. Well, guys, we did about 40 minutes on this, which was longer than what I thought we were going to do on Summer League. So we might have to have a separate one on the re-signing of Aaron Gordon, as well as the trade for Timofey Mozgov, as well as Jerry and Grant. But before we close this out, did you guys miss the Orlando Pro Summer League? Do you wish it was back here? Or were you guys just happy to get out there and watch basketball?
I missed the food. I'll bring that up.
Oh, Josh's favorite food. We didn't even go there.
And I just want to say this really quick, because I know Josh is thinking it in his head, and he's going to bring it up after this podcast is over. But just to give the listeners a little insight into Josh Cohen's brain.
Josh, there's a lot that goes on in there.
Josh often believes that the sequel is better than the original.
Oh, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, D2 is better than Mighty Ducks 1.
That is the lone exception.
And I say D2 because that is the official name of it. You don't say Mighty Ducks 2, you say D2. That's the name of it.
There's nothing that gets him more fired up than
this. You cannot sit here and tell me Jurassic Park 2 is better than the original Jurassic Park.
I don't like Jurassic Park.
Well, that's your own fault.
How about Major League series, Jeff?
No question.
Oh, no, the Major League movie is much better than Major League 2.
How about Jaws?
Love Jaws 2. Actually, I like Jaws 4.
Why?
The revenge. Well, Jaws,
why is
the revenge.
This? Because the characters are already established and you don't have to go through that 30-minute introduction period?
I thought the acting was better.
The acting was better in a sequel than the original?
Certainly 4-1. I might even go 4-2. 3 doesn't belong in the whole mix because 3 had nothing to do with the other 3. Yeah.
The arguing for sequels, Josh Cohen, may be my favorite Josh
Cohen.
Rocky 2 is better than Rocky 1.
Rocky 3 is better than Rocky 2.
Rocky 4 is better than all of them.
Wow. Rocky 5 was a drop-off, though. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, isn't there like a 6 and a 7 or something? I don't even watch those.
It's not part of the anthology.
Yeah.
We're not
counting those, yep.
But I will say this, okay, before we sign off, and we go completely off the rails, you mentioned D2, The Mighty Ducks. That movie has so many great one-liners that I quote on a day-to-day basis. That is the only one that I will agree with you on this subject. And my favorite line, and we're going to bounce on this, is after Team USA beats Iceland, you know, they win the Junior Goodwill Games, and as they're crossing lines and they're shaking hands, I can't remember the Iceland's player, but I think his name is Gunnar Stahl.
Yeah, Gunnar Stahl.
Stahl. He's crossing hands with the coach, and the coach goes, "You lost this one for us, Gunnar." And he goes, "You lost this one for yourself." Magic did not lose Summer League. They won Summer League this year. We have intrigue, guys. Later on this week, we'll talk about other things, but I think Josh is a keeper, don't you?
Absolutely.
He had it a lot. There was no first pod jitters for Josh Cohen.
Wow. I think you just comforted me when I walked into the studio. You made me feel really alive,
very,
really energized.
Very welcoming person, Josh.
Very welcoming.
Well, that does it for us here on Magic Drive Time, the podcast. We'll be back later this week. We'll do a recap on the Magic electing to re-sign Aaron Gordon, what that means for them, as well as some movement in the agate for the Orlando Magic. We'll talk about that coming up later this week. But, hey, thanks for coming back. Thanks for listening. Make sure you rate, subscribe. You can catch us on iTunes as well as Google Play. You can also find us on SoundCloud. You can check out Dan and Josh on OrlandoMagic.com. They've got some good stuff up there from Summer League as well. Catch you guys later.